KBCW News Time now, 8:16. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KBCW. Well, a year ago, some 150 people gathered at the Richens Building in Summit County for a public open house with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources and the Utah Department of Transportation. The meeting to address local citizen concerns about wildlife issues. Joining me now in the studio this morning, I have Erin Ferguson. She's with the group Save People, Save Wildlife. Good morning, Erin.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Leslie.
Yeah, so just when you think you're making some progress, you get news of another moose death last night, I believe, I-80 eastbound, a report of a seriously injured driver, or do we know that the driver made it?
Well, we have no confirmation of exactly what happened. So people driving by said that they thought that's what happened, that, you know, there are emergency vehicles and UHP on scene. So, and then what looked to be part of a moose on the shoulder of the freeway. And so you know, deductive powers indicate that it was a wildlife vehicle incident, but we don't have confirmation of that this morning. So,
yeah. So a lot has happened in the last year due in large part to your group's efforts. Let's start with the most tangible result. We've got some wildlife fencing along Interstate 80 near Jeremy Ranch, but just right. One side of the highway now?
Right, exactly. So that was kind of what primed the pump. So we're going to start somewhere. So the understanding being that eventually wildlife fencing will be installed is what our group's advocating for, clear from Silver Creek Junction all the way to Parley Summit. Fill in that Snyderville gap, if you will. So, and then in between those, we need to have wildlife bridges, overpasses, so they can cross safely from side to side as well. And what's slated for October of 2017 with the federal funding is UDOT has plans to put an overpass at Parley Summit, a wildlife bridge, and then finish the fencing both sides from Jeremy Ranch exit and on-ramp to Parley Summit. So we're concerned in that we don't have anything tangible, a contract, anything in writing confirming that. We have seen, you know, virtual reality 3D plans for the overpass, so that looks really good. You know, we had a meeting with UDOT and they demonstrated that. Our group is pushing at this point to, we want them to start the project earlier because we know the overpass and the fencing isn't going to be finished overnight. So if we can start earlier, the snowfall's crazy, but as early as March or April, and getting cattle guards, double cattle guards on the off ramp, you know, on the on and off ramps, and then also finish the fencing so they can complete their climbing lane project and the overpass. And then the money will be available in October and we can pay what the project has generated. And so we know that so many lives were lost wildlife wise last spring. We don't want that to happen again. So
yeah. So what's the dollar estimate though on doing that?
Well, $1.7 million for the overpass fencing. However, with the climbing lane project from Jeremy Ranch to the summit westbound, they have $5 million slated for wildlife mitigation, and that's the words that UDOT used. So for wildlife fencing, wildlife overpass, so recovered that way. You know, then the next challenge is to continue the wildlife fencing so we're not just pushing the populations east and having them cross the freeway just east of Jeremy Ranch. You know, that's kind of futile. So we want to get this in place, and the sooner the better, because as soon as we get this project completed and the overpasses where the biologists feel that it's appropriate, you know, our group is pushing for multiple, you know, kind of by the, you know, on the way to 40, so to speak, a couple more, because there's so many deer that cross, you know, from the Pine Brook side to the Jeremy Ranch side, and then also by Swanner as well. So yeah, and then 224, we've had recent incidents with moose and, of course, deer, you know, drivers can't, you know, it's right there for all the motorists to see, and it's a problem. And we need to, you know, it's Park City's so busy now, especially with Sundance and Vail, that we really need to consider how can the wildlife safely cross? And as a result, the motorists will be safer.
Yeah. So, I mean, is the fencing working? Because I do see some fence, I mean, it's just sagging. And so, I mean, it's like a deer can jump over it easily. A moose, you know, just plow over it. Yeah.
Precisely. Yeah. And that's the right-of-way fencing that's 4.5 feet tall or so, which, is, you know, at the current state of snowfall is basically buried under snow. So the wildlife fencing has that advantage. It's over 7 feet tall and, you know, preferably closer to 8 feet. So even with snowfall and accumulation that way, there's less of a chance for wildlife to go over it in big snow years. But you know, also, we need to realize that the fencing is not simply to keep animals out or in. It's simply to guide them to the overpasses and underpasses where they have a safe option to cross. You know, so that's kind of a disillusion, if you will, of some people. Oh, we're just trying to fence it in like a backyard. No, we're trying to use the fencing to guide them to, like, the deer escape ramps. You know, if a deer finds themselves on the freeway, they can get up and over those ramps that are, gosh, probably every half mile is slated in the plans. So,
yeah. So in terms of the timing on this, and I mean, you're hoping that you're going to get that overpass built this summer?
Hopefully in 2017. So UDOT has stated, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, UDOT, that they have the funds available October of 17. Now, again, this is all verbal conversation that we've had in this regard. So, you know, we look forward to having things in writing and have a timeline in place so we can tell our donors and the neighborhood. You know, I mean, let everyone know in the community that, but yeah, this is happening. UDOT says that as of this date, this will be completed, and you know, so we have options that way. And I just fear that if they're waiting for the funding to be available, which is October of 17, that the project won't be completed until 2019. You know, I mean, it's a big project.
Yeah. Do we know that these overpasses work?
Yes. There is PBS has done a documentary called Wild Ways, and it has examples of wildlife corridors and fencing from all over the world, Africa, Canada, you know, North America in general. It's amazing how the animals figure it out. You know, elephants, you know, ungulates, all sorts of populations. You know, they. Once they're comfortable with it and they recognize it, they do. Biologically, the data has shown that they do use it once they figure it out.
Yeah. So, in terms of we've got some projects slated for development, the Discovery project. We also have Woodward talking about building the camp there. Any concern about the impacts on wildlife in those locations?
Well, it's all the more reason to give them an option to cross, right? I mean, they're with the construction that we've done in Park City and surrounding areas, you know, it's evident that they do adapt, and we just need to give them options. We can't back them into a corner and then expect them to, you know, I mean, you know, development's going to happen. We just have to do the best job of planning that out. So whether it's an environmental impact statement, whether it's just simply being, you know, a conservationist standpoint, setting aside land for corridors, you know, things like that, we have to think about that, because if we're isolating, you know, our population and wildlife populations on these little islands, we need to have that connect established for, you know, for the big picture, for years to come.
Yeah. How much money has your group raised?
We have raised, over $60,000. And we have recently, you know, you just said that they would match the 1 mile fencing project. So we gave them $42,000 of donated funds. Thank you very much, donors and support groups. And that is simply to just kind of kickstart the project. So once that's happened, there, you know, we want to use the funds that we gave UDOT to continue the fencing east, because they're going to use their funds for the wildlife mitigation Jeremy Ranch to Summit. So we want to continue the project and see it through.
All right. What about a year ago, we had heard a lot about the big elk herd there on the Oscarthorpe property off right. of Old Ranch Road. What we're hearing from DWR is that it's been relatively quiet. The herd's just moved on?
Well, I think with the snowfall, I think they've just chosen different areas to spend the winter, basically. It's just so deep. But again, there seems to be a population shift in terms of, you know, we're seeing elk where we had previously seen moose, and they don't usually cohabitate that closely. And so it's interesting to see what's happening. Are things we want wildlife to stay in this area and be able to cross safely, and that includes, you know, predator and prey alike. So
yeah. So a year later, after this big meeting with UDOT and DWR, do mm-hmm. you feel like you've been heard?
Absolutely. And we're so appreciative of all the cooperation that we've received from UHP, UDOT, things like that. But we're, and of course the community. I mean, first and foremost, the community. Once we started out with the banners to make people realize this is a priority, so many people were so grateful, you know, not only monetary donations, but verbal compliments that, oh my gosh, I'm so glad someone is doing something. For years, I've wanted to do something and not known where to start or what to do.
Well, have you had-
and so this is a great thing that we've started, and we want to see it through.
Yeah, have you had people out there with your signs again this year? I haven't heard about it.
No, we haven't, because we wanted to get UDOT's attention. We achieved that, and now we have a working relationship that we can move forward and expedite this.
All right. Does your group have regular meetings if somebody's interested in joining you?
We do. You can certainly we're trying to coordinate schedules, so it's not really a set meeting date and time, you know, each month, but you can contact us at savepeoplesavewildlife.org is our website, or savepeoplesavewildlife@gmail.com for direct correspondence that way.
Okay, Erin, I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time this
morning. Thanks,
Leslie. KPCW News Time now, 8:30. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, a short meeting at last night's City Council, but council members did approve everything from declaring February as Park City Children's Dental Health Month. They appointed some new SEAC members and approved $1.25 million to purchase the Peace House property in the studio. City Council member Tim Henney, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, sounds like you were the only one who wanted to be mayor pro tem. Did they just kind of go down the line?
Well, it's an easy fix. You change the E to an I, and you have Mayor Pro Tem becomes Mayor Pro Tim. So it just seems natural.
So, I mean, why do we do this? Why is it important that we name a
Well, you have to have, if the mayor is not available, there's a procedure for, you know, I don't want to call it succession because the mayor is still around, but you have to have somebody who is able to step into the position and run the meeting and do the things that need to be done. It's really that simple. It's just procedural.
All right. And the resolution to name February, designate February as Park City Children's Dental Health Month. I mean, what do you know about it? How big of an issue is dental care or the lack of it for Park City children?
Well, I guess there's a bit of an issue. I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things that hasn't really hit on my personal radar, and I would be surprised if too many people have been aware of this, but those in the profession and those who are focused see this as definitely an issue and a need. So it's kind of an easy thing to address and call out, and that will put more focus and put it on more people's radar. So that's a good thing to do.
Yeah, we had talked with People's Health Clinic earlier this week. They're providing February 21st for people who may be interested, free exams, fluoride application, and then just kind of a review about how people can improve their dental care. And I guess you just need to contact People's Health Clinic. And is Park City helping out with that financially at all? Or
I can't answer whether we're helping out with that financially. I think what we're helping with is recognizing that there are needs in our community that don't hit the radar across the board. So, you know, this is one of those opportunities to highlight something and just reaffirm for all of us that we are a broader community than the perception at times might indicate. We are a whole and complete community, and with whole and complete communities comes a whole spectrum from people who are at the very high end of the socioeconomic scale to people who are at the very low end. The Christian Center addresses people in need. We do have people with affordability issues, and we have to take steps to embrace them and to help them, to support them, to recognize them. And I think this is one of those measures.
Okay. Also named three new people to the Special Event Advisory Committee. Again, we're just kind of going to start over here and
Well, you know, we've talked about this before, Leslie, and it's not really a start over. I would call it a reboot, and the reboot is to really get this committee to be a voice of the community. We have other voices who are at the table with regard to events already. We have the resorts. We have the event producers. We have the silly market. We have people who, you know, are on that side of the equation that are interested in producing the events. So what we need is a voice from the community to talk to us and bring into the conversation the concerns, the impacts, and again, have that whole and complete conversation rather than a one-sided conversation. So that's really what this is. We have representation across the entire spectrum now, and we feel very good about that. And, you know, we'll see where we go.
All right. Also approved the real estate purchase contract for the Peace House property in Old Town for $1.25 million. Why is this something that the council felt was worth purchasing?
Well, I actually think that it just makes good economic sense. It's a piece of land in a good location that, as it's currently constructed, would house, I think you even mentioned it in your interview the other day, it has five apartments, can have five people in it. With some easy fixes and a very small amount of money, that could be increased to 8 and then possibly even 10 or above. So we think for the money, we're getting really good value for that kind of dormitory housing that we already have over by the Public Works facility for transit. And our transit is busting at the seams, and we just need more housing. And this is a really cost-effective way to create it in a terrific location.
And that was the thing. I mean, this is going to be used exclusively for bus drivers as a way.
That's the plan right now, yeah. Yeah, and it's being purchased by the transit fund.
Right.
It's, you know, I heard that in your interview, too. It's not, my understanding, it's not coming out of affordable housing. It's coming out of transit. This is a dedicated transit facility, so we're using transit funds, which does not deplete or impact our affordable housing funds that we're using to build that 800 units over the next 10 years and subsidize to the tune of $40 million.
And is that it? I mean, do we really just have, it's a seasonal job, so it's just really during the winter where things get so expensive to live here that we need to provide something for bus drivers in particular?
We expand our driving, the employees that are in the driving pool significantly in the winter and I think we do in the summer as well. So we have two seasons, you know, that are the majority of the year. And I think that, and I don't really know what they do with the apartments when they're in the downtimes and what we used to call the shoulder season, which are going away, by the way. So I think if you project the current trends out, they'll be used probably closer to year round than they will be seasonally.
Okay, and real quick, I wanted just to mention, you had talked last night at the meeting about all the great press that Park City's getting, 16 major articles, not related to Sundance, but related to Park City being a top destination to visit. You had mentioned businesses who previously wouldn't even consider Park City as a venue for their events, now making it a priority. So this is a good thing?
Well, I think that depends on your perspective. I have oftentimes found myself sitting in presentations and looking at these 3-minute videos that are being created and then used in our marketing campaign. When I say ours, I mean the Chamber Bureau's marketing campaign on behalf of the business interest in the community to bring visitation, to increase visitation, and to hit those key markets. And I look around and go, wow, that's really an appealing message. And if we think we have a lot of people here now and we've done a great job in creating this wonderful place to visit, wait until these videos hit those markets. And that's what's happening. So your perspective, if you feel like there's high impact from visitation, from congestion, from, you know, what we have created here, which is a very vibrant business community and a vibrant community, very deep into the roots of this place, there's disruption that comes with that. There's an impact that comes with that. So it's where you are, I guess, as a stakeholder, as a member of the community, and do you feel the impacts more or do you feel the benefits more? We're attracting an awful lot of people, and that's what's happened. People who would not come here because of facilities, say 5 years ago, and certainly 10 years ago, are now deciding that regardless of facilities, they're going to find creative ways to come here. The example I use is a company who brings 200 employees for their corporate retreat and this incentive program that a lot of companies do. In the past would have said, do you have a center that can hold our 2,000 employees for our 3 or 4 day event? And we would say, no, we don't have that. And they say, oh, well, that's too bad. We'll go elsewhere. Now they're calling back those same companies and they're saying, we understand you don't have the facilities and the infrastructure, but we're going to do it in two separate groups, 1,000 and 1,000 over the course of 6 days instead of 1 3-day. And they're making that commitment because they want to come here. And that's a huge change. And that's what's happened. That's what we're experiencing. Everybody wants to come to Park City. Is that good? I don't know. Has impacts, obviously.
Well, certainly we've talked about the last year just about event fatigue. And I mean, maybe it spills over into business, you know, just the impacts from the business community. So, I mean, I guess we just need to find a balance with that, too.
Well, and exactly, Leslie. And you know what we really need to do is have an entire community conversation with all the stakeholders. And that is so difficult to do. We are trying to have better outreach. We're trying, you know, across the board, we have now a community engagement department headed by Linda Jaeger. Lynn Ware Peak works in it. And we're trying to go deeper into our contact with a much broader segment, well, with the entire community. We would like to hear from everybody, not just, you know, the voices that get energized and activated when there's an impact, or the voices that get energized and activated when they feel a missed business opportunity or a better business opportunity. And so we hear these kind of singular voices that come out of components of the community. We need to have an entire community conversation, similar to what we had 25 years ago around, Empire and Flagstaff, when the entire community got energized and made a conscious decision to go down a path. We're kind of at that point where we need to make a conscious decision as to what we want to be in the next 5 years, 10 years, and 20 years.
So is the next community vision being scheduled with Miles?
Yeah, Miles, he's busy with his leadership, but I think we may be evolving the community vision concept into more of this, a better community outreach. But we'll see what Linda Jaeger and her department comes up with. That's a big priority and interest of the current council.
Okay, Tim, thanks for your time this morning.
Okay, Les.
KPCW News Time now. Excuse me, 8:42. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, as we've been reporting, Recycle Utah Executive Director Inza Riepen has announced her resignation. She joins me now in the studio, along with the chairman of the Recycle Utah Board, Bruce Erickson. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Yeah, so Inza, after 17 years, you just figure it's time for a change?
It is. It's time for somebody younger and better than I to come in and bring us to a new level of awareness in the county and to make better things happen.
Yeah, so you haven't done enough?
No, there is so much more that I want to do, but we need to move. We need to have a bigger space, and Bruce is working on it. Right, Bruce?
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, when's your last day then?
Well, I picked, I have to talk to you about this, because I picked Sundance to make this announcement, knowing that you wouldn't have any time to even consider thinking about this, and look what you've done. My last day is also a good one. It's April 1st. And okay. I thought that was funny, too.
Or March 31st?
No.
Are you stopping on April 1st?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Bruce, what's the process then for replacing her?
Well, first of all, we're going to cancel Earth Day because there's no reason to do that again. That's on April 22nd. But we are going out for a search.
No, you will not.
We are searching for an executive director. I will never tell you that we're going to replace INSA, but there are good people in this community. There are good people on the Wasatch Front. There's a couple of recycle operations that we can learn from. There are three missions. One is to help us get a new location. Two is to enhance our education programs. And three, really be proactive in the volunteer community and really show people one of the cool things that INSA has done. So it took 17 years for INSA to convince the world that it's really fun to go recycling, and it's the coolest thing in the world. It's far superior to music or sports or entertainment.
Don't go there.
Well, I mean, INSA says everyone's replaceable, but just saying, it's going to be really challenging for you guys to find someone willing to put in 60-hour work weeks.
Well, that's why it's a fun job, not just a job. It's the same as your job. So, yeah, it's very challenging, and we have a really good community-based board, which I think is really good for Recycle Utah as well, to help me make the selection. And INSA is going to be around to tell me what to think again, so we'll be fine.
Yeah. So, INSA, you've taken our small community recycling center really to an envied institution for not only the number of materials that you accept, but certainly the education and outreach that you've done. So in terms of your replacement, I mean, what's more important? I mean, the logistics of running a break-even recycling center or the education outreach?
First, you have to educate and let people know that there is no plan B here. We have one planet. We need to take care of it. And it's best to talk to children, because the children can then go home, talk to you, and that's how it all happened. We started with the kids at the Kobe School, and here we are 17 years later, and you remember that recycling is more important than making garbage. Now, community change, social change is what I'm after, and that needs to go from the bottom up and the top down. The bottom up, that was on me. The top down, that's on you, Bruce.
Well, I agree. That is kind of the job of the board and trying to move the Recycle Center. And actually, Park City Conservation Association, which is our real name, and the business model that we have is that our recycling operations, our commodity operations, all go to do one thing, and that's to fund water conservation and sustainability education. So the reason INSA runs the Recycle Center is to fund the education program. And that's what we do.
So what's the news on the move?
The news on the move is we've formed a really good relationship with the county so far, and they have a couple of sites that they're considering. We really appreciate the county manager's involvement in this. I believe that we're finally on a firm path moving forward. The city's purchase of the property over at the Boneyard location on the Triangle Giselli Mill parcel gives us a firm date for the move, which is roughly going to be late 2018 into 2019. So we actually have a date now. The county is helping us very much move this forward and understands our role in protecting the landfill and protecting the environment.
Yeah. So the property that Park City purchased there at the yard, that's contiguous with the recycling center, so that The current recycling center would become a part of any development there?
The city really wants a portion of the recycling operation and the warehouse to remain in the city limits in that location. The warehouse really serves that population that's close to the recycle center. It's very important to them, and it's very important to us to do that. Part of the commodity business is probably best handled in a larger location closer to where a lot of our demand comes from, the Jeremy Ranch, Pine Brook, Glenwild, Promontory, Colony kind of folks that don't really get the services.
So we didn't, I mean, we've talked about the Triangle parcel, but I've heard that's off the...
There's a whole bunch of Triangle parcels, but the one that's at the county to the south of the Home Depot is probably not the right location given the county's general plan and the access. I think that we can meet the county general plan much better in a couple of the other sites that the county manager is talking about.
So are we talking like the Klein Dolly?
Well, I'm not going to speculate because this is in Tom's bailiwick. And because there are real estate transactions, he hasn't really told us everything. So and we respect the county plan and we respect the county manager.
So what about all of the events from the Green Drinks to the Water Festival to the Harvest Festival? Do they all stay?
Yes, they will. They're already planned for this year and they will continue, because all of our events have messages connected to them. our hazardous waste collection events will continue for as long as we don't have a new center. Once we do, that will become a daily event. And that, again, will lower the cost for such events because they're very, very expensive. So a lot of what we do has happened organically, one bay at the time. I remember talking to many council members at the time and saying, I need more space, I need more space. Now we have outgrown what we have there. We could do way better with more space and offer more programming and therefore take more garbage out of the landfill. And I think that is something that we all have to do. The it is incredible that we can, that we are allowed and permitted and can so easily dispose of garbage at such a low cost. So it is my hope that in the future, garbage will cost a whole lot more money and recycling will become mandatory. I think that's where we need to be.
Yeah. So you think you've got a couple, you got a couple months, you think you'll be able to fill that position?
Absolutely, we're going to be able to fill the position. We will never fill Ince's shoes, and we're giving some thought to naming the new center or at least one of the bins after her. We haven't decided whether it's the wine
bottle.
I've become
a bin sponsor? That's going to
be
awesome.
Yeah, I think we'll do it for free. But I think important message that we need to put out there, Leslie, is that, you know, the work that INSA has done really puts her up there in the pantheon of, how do I do for that word, pantheon.
Not bad.
Of how this town was created. It's on the same level as the Terry Orrs and the Meachie Whites and the Sandra Morrisons. And the Susan Fulners of the world that have actually, in the 17 or 20 years, created the environment that we live in. You know, I can't live up to that role. I'm not a very nice person. So realistically, that's what's moving forward for us. And we really respect INSA for that, and we will name a bin after her, or perhaps the styrofoam crushing machine would look good.
That already has a name. Can I just say a quick thank you? Our support for our financials comes from the community. 44% of our quote-unquote income comes from community support. So when you come to the center, whether it's this little one for another couple of years or the next one, drop a buck. And there was actually a terrific PSA a long time ago with two council members saying drop a buck, and someone else said, heck, drop five. So once you do that, we are going to be in great financial shape to offer more services.
So what's next for you?
Next for me is to find another cause that needs saving, right? I'm not done working. Park City is home, so if somebody has a cause, call me. Definitely.
All right. Are we accepting styrofoam now?
We are indeed. Yes, the machine is working. We have space again. We don't have space for more snow, so if anybody has a truck with a blade in front, come and shovel us out. That would be really nice. And the good thing is that, you know, I can say these things on your program, so I want to thank you first and foremost for letting me come and visit with you once a month.
Okay.
I'll be back.
All right. Well, we're neighbors. We'll see you soon. Bruce, Inza, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, tonight, local orchestra students will be performing Baroque music at the Park City Community Church. In the studio with details, I have Scott Tanner. He's the director of orchestras for both the Park City High School and Treasure Mountain Junior High School. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me here on the radio.
Yeah, sure. So I mentioned tonight at Park City Community Church. What time?
Yeah, 7 o'clock tonight. We begin our concert of the Baroque music.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How many students do you have performing?
We have 18 students. Bass, cello, violin, violas. And so, yeah, we have a nice chamber orchestra, and the students are really excited for tonight's performance.
All right, so tell us about some of the works they'll be performing.
So tonight we're going to feature works by Corelli, Telemann. We actually have Brian Croce, a senior at the high school. He'll perform the Telemann flute concerto. We have works by Vivaldi, Johann Sebastian Bach, and Handel. I also might mention that we have a guest violinist, Monty Belknap, coming from BYU. He's the violin professor there, and he'll perform the unaccompanied sonata in G minor by Bach as well.
So what defines Baroque music?
I'm sorry. Baroque music is music of the 1600 to 1750 time period, and it replaced, in essence, the music of the Renaissance. And so it's pretty lively type music. It's very upbeat and just a lot of fun. The music tonight will feature a lot of the students as soloists, and they'll be playing duets and a variety of different types of ensembles like that within the chamber music ensemble.
All right. So we often talk about just classical music. I mean, the Baroque is just really kind of one piece
yes.
of that. Yeah.
That's right. When people talk about classical music, in essence, they typically talk about music of instrumental type. And so this is of a specific time period. Before the classical and the Mozart era, this is the Baroque era. So we're really excited about it. And it was an important part of music in its own time period, which actually the instrumental music surpassed that of the importance of the vocal music when the opera was such an important part of the classical scene, I guess.
Yeah. So why is it important, though, that children learn this music? I mean, it just seems like it's part of every music education that we're playing the classics.
It is. I don't think the classics will ever entirely fade away or disappear from the scene, the musical scene. Baroque music is music that you will hear all around the world, or at least the European continent and of course, America. The Baroque music will, Bach, I should say, even is such an important part of studying and analyzing music theory that his works are still analyzed at the university level in a master's degree even. And so those works will, I think, forever be works that students should be aware of and be able to play and also see the enjoyment of this type of music. So
it's a fundraising concert? Okay.
Fundraising concert to support the students, actually our library. We spend a lot of money in music each year. And we just wanted to be able to beef up our the selections of music that I can choose from for the students to learn. And so that's the fundraising concert tonight. So it's a $10 admission at the door. We have symphony students who will have tickets at the door. And also for families, if families would like to come, we have a $25 admission charge for that. We hope to make this an annual event, whereby in the future perhaps the money might go towards the expense of students traveling with us to festivals or to perform somewhere in the United States.
All right. Do you have any of those upcoming?
Not to announce.
Yeah.
But in the works.
Great. Okay. Anything else you'd like to tell us, Scott?
I think that's about it. I sure appreciate the time, Leslie.
Oh, sure. That's Scott Tanner, again, the director of orchestras for both Park City High School and Treasure Mountain Junior High.